Welcome to Cultimatum, the podcast uncovering the dark realities of cults and human trafficking. I'm your host, Anonymous Andrew, and each week we dive deep into the manipulation, control, and courageous escapes that define these worlds.
And I'm Melody, Andrew's co-host. Having experienced the depth of a cult firsthand, specifically the House of Yahweh, I am here as an advocate for fellow survivors.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests are their own and do not reflect the official policy or position of Cultimatum or its affiliates. The content discussed on this podcast are based on personal experiences and should not be construed as factual or legal advice. Neither the host nor the guest are liable for any statements made during the episodes. Listeners are encouraged to conduct their own research and seek professional advice where appropriate.
And before we dive into today's episode, we want to issue a trigger warning. Some episodes may cover explicit and potentially disturbing subjects such as sexual abuse, rape, human trafficking, suicide, and other sensitive subjects. Listener discretion is advised. Hey, Cultimatum fans, before we dive into today's episode, we need a tiny favor from each of you.
That's right. If you love what you hear, please take a moment to rate and review us on Apple and Spotify.
Your support helps us to reach new listeners and bring more awareness and attention to these important topics.
So tap that star rating, drop a quick review, and help us spread the word. It really does make a difference.
Thank you so much for tuning in and for your amazing support. We truly appreciate each and every one of you. Now let's get started with the show.
Here we go. Welcome to another episode of the Cultimatum Podcast, the culture of cults and human trafficking. And my name is Anonymous Andrew. And with me tonight is my co-host Melody. Hello, Melody.
Hello, Andrew. I'm so excited. Today we have a truly powerful guest whose story sheds light on one of the most secretive and controlling polygamous groups in the United States. Eskel is a survivor of the Kingston Clan, also known as the Order, a fundamentalist Mormon offshoot led by Paul Kingston. This oppressive group enforces extreme and strict control over its members. After breaking free, Eskel has been exposing the inner workings of the Order and providing support for those trapped inside through his platforms on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, and YouTube. He is courageously sharing his experience and to help educate others about coercive control and empowering fellow survivors to reclaim their freedom. Eskel, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be on.
Eskel, this is such a treat for us and me in particular. And Melody came to me about a week ago and said, you have to watch this documentary called Secrets of Polygamy?
Secrets of Polygamy. Yeah. You can go back polygamy. And watch Escaping Polygamy too, because they kind of lead into each other. But yes.
I'm going to do that. And I have to tell you, Eskel, I watched, so the first two episodes are about the FLDS, but the third episode was about your ex-cult, the Order, or the Kingston. And my skin was crawling. I'm a parent, and although I don't have any daughters, I just can't. My heart bled for the mothers and the fathers who had all of their children separated from them and kidnapped, and the boys were forced to start working at 14. I don't want to tell your story, but I've just got to tell you, I'm fired up. Let's get into this. The purpose of our podcast is to bring awareness to these cults and even get under their skin if we can. And it's working because we've gotten a couple of cease and desist orders, but they're idle threats.
Really?
Yeah. Wow. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We got a couple. Even one, we had to take the episode down. So, but we don't back down easily. Anyway, this is your story. So let's tell us what you're up to.
Well, I mean, it's been a wild journey, but I feel like being out of the cult, I've just been able to go on this great adventure of life. I've been learning, I've been growing, been meeting new people, and I like to try my very best to always just take the positive. I know I grew up in a crazy background, but I learned a lot from it. And so I take that with me everywhere I go, and I tend to be decently successful at what I do. I work hard. I've had a lot of different experiences, and growing up in the cult definitely made me have to be an adult a lot quicker than most people, I think. would normally have to. And so rather than seeing that as like a negative thing and I didn't get much of a childhood, I try my best to just take it as positive and use that to be able to just be successful, to work hard, make the most of it. I'm never going to be able to go back and try and be a kid again, you know, never get to relive my childhood, but I can make the most of where I'm at now. And I feel like that's what my newest like motto, I guess, has been and my message to a lot of people, just to make the most of where you're at and to just try and make a difference. You know, you can really do a lot in this world.
I followed you on TikTok or Instagram. I forget which one you're on or if you're on both. And Melody sent me a couple of your videos and I am very proud of you for the content that you're putting out there. It is extremely brave. You know, during the documentary that I watched last night, there were a couple of people who wanted to talk to. So in the Secrets of Polygamy, there is a law enforcement officer who is narrating and investigating all these polygamy cults. And a lot of the people he interviewed did not want to come on camera. So they blocked their face and they altered their voice. So knowing how powerful the FLDS and the order are, just kudos to you for coming on, not hiding your identity and speaking and using your full name. I think that's very brave of you. So
yeah.
Thank you.
Oh, yeah. I definitely take precautions. I think the fact that I make it very well known that I film a lot, that I've always got my phone on me that's a camera, I feel like that does protect me a lot. The order is very careful to make sure they don't leave any evidence of the illegal things that they do.
So
I feel like if you take some precautions, it definitely helps a lot. And so that's
one of the raids that happened on their banking or their office, they were tipped off and they cleaned out all the documents or the computers. I'm just reciting what I saw on the documentary last night. So, and including that energy plant. So is that part of the Kingston? What is it called?
The renewable energy? Is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. So they've tried to disown the man that created that company, but he was very much associated. He was raised in the order and he started that company essentially just ripping people off. And well, they made false claims. They essentially were selling renewable energy, but really it wasn't. They were substituting a different product.
Yeah.
And they got billions of dollars.
$500 million. Yeah. $500 million the first year I heard. And it was all fraud. They didn't produce the particular oil that we're going to use to regenerate the energy or whatever. And I think they were laundering their money through there, correct?
Oh, yeah. They did a lot. And what's surprising to me is I remember when that was first being introduced and they were praising that man. I remember his family got special privileges in the group because they were bringing in so much money. So his family was very much idolized. They were very well taken care of. Everyone liked them in the group. But then once all of the legal issues happened, that's when they tried to separate themselves and realized, well, this is a problem. So it was just really funny seeing them do that full 180.
So Eskil, I assume that here's a question. I assume that you were born in, and I assume that most people in the order are born in. I am assuming not a lot of people join because it's such a secretive group and they have so much emphasis on having pure blood and all of these things. I'm sure I would assume that you don't have a lot of members joining. Is that correct?
Yeah. So I was born into it, but the surprising thing is my mom was not born into it. She actually joined it through marriage. She married my dad. My dad is the current leader's brother, but the previous leader's son. And so she joined marrying one of the leader's kids. And that's how she got wrapped into all of it.
And so was she LDS or FLDS and then somehow met them through some other means other than being part of the group?
So that's what's so wild about it. I have asked her many times, like, what got her wrapped up in all of this? And essentially what happened is she lived near the area. She wasn't even LDS, actually.
Wow.
She wasn't very like a religious person hardly at all. Her dad was a little bit more religious, but because she lived in Utah, she knew a lot of LDS people. And then she also, the area they lived was very close to where the order church was. So just through location, she had connections to order members. And so I think it's just kind of funny how it worked out because it's like so random. And you're right. It's extremely rare. But it did happen for my mom and for more of her family, because her family was so close to everything and always around them that her family was kind of, because her older sister also married into it. So she had other family members that ended up joining. So still to this day, though, like, I don't even know if she can give a good answer as to why she thought it was so okay to be a part of it. But it was through marriage. So I think a lot of it came to she was so used to you get attached to your husband, you know, you become one with your husband, whatever he believes, you believe. And so through that type of manipulation and brainwashing, that's kind of how she was able to rationalize it and kind of be okay with it. Clearly, though, even to this day, like, she has an episode on escaping polygamy. She's attempted to leave multiple times and things like that. So, yeah, it's very complex.
Okay, I'm going to come out of the gate like a thoroughbred and just start firing questions away. The documentary I saw last night, so this documentary focused on the first two episodes of the Fundamentalist Latter-day Saints, which is, I guess, an offshoot of the LDS, and they continued polygamy with Warren Jeff, correct? And was your cult, the Order or the Kingston, were they also an offshoot of LDS, or they were nothing to do with LDS?
No, they still call themselves LDS, but in a secretive way, because they always say, and I think every group does this, they say, we are the original LDS. The other churches are fake LDS. Everyone tries to claim that they're the original, and the Order does that too. The Order keeps saying, we live the way LDS members used to live. Right? When Joseph Smith first established the LDS, the Mormon Church, they lived polygamy. They lived by that law of consecration, by the law of plural marriage and the old-fashioned LDS ways. And the Order still does that. That's why they call themselves fundamentalists. They really pride themselves in, we are trying to still be the exact same way as when Joseph Smith very first created the church.
Okay. Continuing with my firing off from the hip. And I ask this a lot about a lot of our guests, and I hope, I don't know if you have an answer to this, but from what I saw last night, and again, I saw it was very disturbing. The FLDS is grooming 13-year-olds, 12-year-old women to become young wives. And I see that the Order is doing the same thing. And while in the FLDS, Warren Jeff was arrested, and also his brother, I think, or the next prophet that filled in, there's two or three of them doing life sentences or something like that. They have not been able to get to Paul Kingston, right? He's still safe.
He's very careful, very secretive. Even a lot of Order members themselves do not know how many wives he has. We've been able to confirm close to 25, but he will have secret ceremonies. He'll have everything very private so that nobody can find out a lot of that stuff. It's very hard to know. Even his own kids. I've asked his own kids how many wives their dad has, and they'll be like, I don't know. It's
so
crazy.
In the state of Utah, polygamy is illegal, right?
Yeah, but it's been slightly it went from 1 degree to like a slightly.
It went from a federal offense down to what they call an infraction.
Exactly.
Right. What does that mean?
From what I understand, is it an assess? It basically means that they don't really enforce it. Even with Tom Green, Tom Green is crazy because he went on Judge Judy. He went in front of the courts and talked about cases that he had, and literally, like, I don't know how he didn't end up going to jail. He went into the courthouse with all of his wives with him and somehow didn't end up going to jail. I know back far enough, he did serve some time, and then he just went right back to living polygamy, though. But I don't know how. It just, nothing ever seems to happen.
Why? Here comes the question that I just seem to ask everybody, and until I get an answer, I'm going to keep asking it. Why can't law enforcement do something about this?
Man.
And if you don't know the answer, but I'd like your opinion, at least, you know, you may not know.
My personal opinion is a little bit biased because I go to my mom all the time. And so I assume a lot of other plural marriages might be like my mom, where my mom will say up and down that she doesn't like polygamy. She does not agree with it. She doesn't think it's a good thing, but she still thinks that she's going to get some sort of a blessing from living it. So she's going to still live it in whole. It's kind of like I compare it to gamblers. someone who keeps playing the lottery and they're like, I'm going to win something in the next
one day. I'm going to win. Yeah, yeah.
So I'd imagine in a lot of them, like if police officers went to Tom Green's house or some of these plebeians' homes, the wives themselves would lie up and down. The lies will protect them because they have this false promise. There's these false realities that they're told. So it's really hard to prosecute someone when the victims themselves are saying, oh no, don't prosecute, leave them alone. So I think that's what makes it so hard to prosecute any polygamists, you know, because they've convinced and brainwashed the victims to not do anything about it, to not say anything, to let it all slide.
And here comes another difficult question to answer that I don't know if you know the answer to, but while I was watching the documentary, there was a toddler, I think she was 9 months old, that was in the care, and I have to be careful about this because I'm not accusing Paul Kingston, but I think it was either Paul Kingston or his brother or his son who beat the child to death. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, it was his brother. I can't remember if it was Daniel or I want to say maybe Jesse, but my guess would have been Daniel for that one. I remember the time when that happened. Everyone was talking about it. It was a really big deal. It's crazy right. That they're able to do
that. The poor girl, child, toddler, had a very, they said that the size of the hole in her head was, they said that she fell and they blamed the babysitter, but they said it was blunt force trauma. And by the way, I need to make sure that I say
allegedly
it was Paul Kingston, not, I don't, because he hasn't been arrested and he has not been prosecuted. And I don't even know if they're investigating it. But when I saw that a child had been murdered somebody in that order is responsible, and yet here comes again. Why did the law enforcement not look into this? I think they did, and they arrested the babysitter, I think is what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that?
Yeah, well, I definitely wouldn't know the answer to that.
Okay, fair
enough.
I
remember hearing similar, and just like you, I'm shocked that there's not more looking into it. I would imagine maybe it has something to do with whoever they did put the blame on. Maybe they accepted that and they were willing to take the blame, because I definitely wouldn't put it past order members to take the blame for a numbered man.
Yeah.
Many of them would happily go to jail for Paul Kingston or for a numbered man. So they have these really dedicated members that would literally do anything for them. And so I'd imagine it's not too hard for them to put the blame on someone else.
That's one thing I'll just never understand, is how they can blindly and faithfully do something like that. So she's being accused of murder. That's the way I understood it. They arrested her because she was caring for the child and she heard the thump in the other room and she went there and the child was on the floor bleeding and they played the 911 call. And from what I understand, they arrested her, but she wasn't the one that hurt the child. So anyway, it was just something I needed to ask you right up the front. So you want to get back to your story, or Melody, did you have a question?
Well, I had a theory, and I'm going to ask Eskel if he thinks this is a possibility, because the cult that I was in practices polygamy as well. And there's lots of theories with us ex-members too, that we suspect that law enforcement in the area is probably also being paid off. Do you suspect there could be some of that also going on in your particular group?
Oh yeah, definitely. Because the order really tries to run a lot like a business. And I was shocked when I found out the estimation of how much all of the assets the order has, the amount that it was all worth. I was really shocked. And it's crazy how much of an emphasis they have on running like a business and making money. Money is one of their top priorities. They really focus a lot on that.
Last night they said it was over $1 billion in assets.
Right? Isn't that crazy?
It's a lot of money for a church.
Yeah,
yep.
I want to get as much information about that out there, because order members don't know that. And it's shocking to hear, because when I was still there, there were multiple times where they were asking families not to celebrate Christmas and to not get Christmas presents so that they wouldn't spend more of the group's money, because everyone puts their money all in the same pot, right? And so for them to go and ask families to not spend any money at all and to buy these horrible living condition of a home, and then they have over $1 billion net worth, like, to me, that's crazy. That's absolutely insane. And it goes to show just how unfair it is. The rich people in the group can have whatever they want, multiple homes, crazy nice things. And then the ones that aren't willing to be a squeaky wheel just get nothing. It's really sad.
It's disgusting. It's one word. It's just disgusting. And okay.
Well, I would like to hear more about what it was like for you growing up and your perception, and what was your childhood like in the order, and then we'll go from there to how you ended up leaving.
Okay. Yeah, definitely. When I was young, that was the majority of the brainwashing happening. They really try to isolate us. I remember going to lots of different Sunday school classes. You go to not only just church on Sundays, but you go to different types of scripture study classes and Sunday school classes throughout the week. But even beyond that, they have their own school. I went to a school that was ran by the group. They were literally the same Sunday school teachers I had at the church school were the same teachers I had at a lot of the elementary school, but it was the school ran by the group. And they really do that to, first of all, isolate you to make sure you don't have much connections with the outside world, because then you can't compare and contrast. You can't get answers to realize how strange the environment is that you're in. But it also just normalizes everything. Like, I'll never forget just being out at the schoolyard with a bunch of my friends. And we're just like, you know, 10 years old, talking about how many wives we need to have. There were multiple times we talk about how we were praying and we were hoping so bad we could get our first wife by just age 13. And how that would be the coolest thing ever. And we were going to try to be so righteous to do that. And then we'd also go and say, we better have at least two by the time we're 16. Otherwise, we're slack. And it's just that kind of conversation is so normalized when you're raised in that group. And everyone around you is in that same situation. So they really do find ways to make it just seem so normal and to convince you that that's the way that life is. And then they try to make sure it's really hard for you to see anything outside of the group. So it was just crazy. Oh, thinking back on it all the time, it just really shocks me for sure.
I'm going to ask you a very personal question. Mm-hmm. At 13, 14, when you knew that you were going to be able to marry somebody, one or two wives at a young age, was it because that was how you were brought up? This is going to sound, I want to understand how it works. Or was it that any 13 or 14-year-old prepubescent adolescent boy has got hormones running through his body, and you were going to be able to have a wife and sex and all that stuff? So was that what behind driving you, or was it the indoctrination that I get to have a wife because that's part of the cult's protocol?
For me personally, I definitely don't think sex had anything to do with it, because they don't talk a whole lot about sex. I remember being terrified, even talking about masturbation or anything like that. We would try to avoid those conversations at all costs. But what was normal was the fact that, like, I obviously developed a crush. There was a girl in school that I liked. I thought she was cute. And when I would go talk to my friends, the first train of thought was, you like that girl, well, then she's probably going to be one of your wives. Or, like, that's just what you do. That's the whole point in liking girls or men and women being associated with one another, is to get married and have kids, because that's what the church teaches you. That's what your constant train of thought.
They want more children, so the boys can go work and the women, the girls, can be groomed to be wives. So, see, Melody, this is the one, in other interviews, I've asked guests, what, like, for example, the other night, I asked him, why did you marry a heterosexual woman when he was gay? And I said, was it to procreate more people to join the cult or be part of the cult? And he said, no, that wasn't it. But here's an example of where they do want them to procreate,
right,
to bring more children into the mix so they can keep going.
And I guarantee you that with my cult, that was the goal. The women were expected to have lots of children. You were supposed to get married.
And some of them had 13, 18 children.
Right.
Yeah, they had like 18.
I think the average in the order per wife is 10 kids.
Wow.
10 kids per wife is the average. And if you take the average, so they've actually done this. They've done the math because they've tracked all of the members in the order, right? And they have all of the ages. The average age of the order member was 9 years old. So that just goes to show that most of them are all kids. The majority of the group is kids. It's crazy. They're just popping them out.
Another question for you, Eskel, and this is based on experience from my own cult, is that in my polygamous cult, what happened is that a lot of the older men that were considered elders actually had, I'm going to use the word first, dibs on the young girls. And a lot of times the young men were prohibited or were given all these reasons they weren't righteous enough, holy enough, they weren't worthy enough to get married, till eventually a lot of the young men would just end up leaving in droves almost, because when they hit teenage years, when they hit those years when they were starting to actually want to have a wife or wives, and they just wasn't, would never happen. Does the order do something similar to where then these young boys are almost run off so that the young women are given to a lot of the older men as subsequent wives?
Yeah, definitely. Like, you can tell there's a hierarchy. The closer you are to the leader himself, the more dibs, I guess, or the more privilege that you get. But one thing I think the order does a little bit differently is they really do view women as a type of currency. And there's lots of unspoken transactions. There are multiple families in the order that have these unspoken agreements that they will have every single one of their daughters marry only certain family members' sons. So it's almost like though that person's family's daughters are already like contributed or guaranteed to go to a certain family.
It was like an inner circle. You had to be part of the elder inner circle to get dibs on the younger, the teenage girls.
Mm-hmm. Something along those lines. I don't know. Right. They really don't have the whole age thing. Like I remember growing up, like they don't reference age at all. They take that whole age is just a number to a whole new extreme. They're not embarrassed to say that 13-year-olds should be getting married. As soon as they can procreate, they should be getting married. They've even had, again, unspoken agreements that just born women are already designated to a certain man that they will marry.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
So they take betroths way too far. Like there's a lot of normal betroths where a girl will be 14, she gets betrothed, and they won't get married till she's at least 16 or something. But they'll even take it further than that, and you'll know certain girls that are just very young little girls, and you know that they're already been called dibs on by certain men.
They're already spoken for. Right.
Exactly.
Yep. Again, it's disgusting. Crazy. It's just disgusting.
The worst part about that?
Sure.
Well, in my personal opinion, just because I've lived firsthand and seen when those girls that when you know that they already are assigned to someone, it makes it so awkward interacting with them as kids. Because if you start developing any type of a crush on them, you almost try and like tell yourself you can't. You're constantly told that this like isn't allowed. And of course, it's still going to happen, you know, that she's around people her own age and they develop crushes and they end up falling in love. And it just turns into a disaster. There's always so much heartbreak and there's so much tension too about the fact that they know what the group is doing, but it feels so wrong. Like everyone knows that this is horrible. This shouldn't be happening, but there's nothing they can do about it. It's really crazy to see that happen.
Wow. Yeah, I've had similar stories. I mean, in my group, they had like young girls as young as 4 that were called for by older men. And then there was, I know one girl that her parents actually essentially sold her to a man in his 60s for a new truck, but just strange transactions.
Oh my God.
Like that. Very, very things that when you hear it, it just makes you cringe as a parent or just even as a human being. You're just like, wow, that just seems like, I mean, I can't even fathom that kind of stuff, but it sounds like similar stuff is going on and was going on or is going on. But, in the group that you left as well.
But that goes way beyond. So let's just call the white elephant in the room the white elephant. There's more than sex trafficking going on of minors. Let's just call it what it is. They're trafficking minors.
Yes.
You know, absolutely. As young as 8, 9, 10, they're assigning them. They said when she's able, and when we say she's able to procreate, I'm guessing once she has her period, she can now bear children, right? So, but they're taking it one step further, maybe in the house of Yahweh, where they're, like you said, bargaining. They're selling them. Oh, it's now it's not just trafficking, it's selling of the human flesh. I don't know if the order did that, but in the house of Yahweh, if he's saying, here's my truck, give me your daughter, that's a transaction of a human being. It's disgusting.
It is.
I'm sorry.
It is. Yeah, it's crazy stuff that goes on, and it's the things that, and I'm sure that when Esco was part of the group, he thought this was normal stuff. I mean, this must have seemed normal to him when he was growing up with it, and probably not until he was out and had time to. How long have you been out, Esco?
Oh man, it's been about 8 years now. It's been quite a while.
So you've had time to deconstruct. But that, you know, that's a process. I've been out of my cult for 30 years and I still have these aha moments where I'm like, oh, that's why they did that. I didn't see it for what it was when I was in it. But when you look at it from the outside looking in, you're like, that was another form of control. And it's just these little things that pop up and you don't, I mean, you figure it out years later as, and I'm sure you're still having moments like that. But I'd be curious. So what were your teenage years like after you got into childhood and started getting into your teenage years? How did things change for you?
Before he answers that, let's go back a couple years. From what I understand, many of the boys, 8, 9, 10, 12, were put to work in the fields. Were you a worker?
So the order tries to pride themselves on becoming more, I don't know what you'd call it, more developed. They really focus on businesses that are futuristic. One of the biggest profitable companies is a gun making company. They make guns because they see a lot of value in it, and they see that as like something that'll help them to progress, I guess, you know, become more developed and whatnot.
Oh,
and
formidable.
So what they strongly encouraged me, because I was a man, they wanted me to get into college at a very young age and make sure that I was going to have the ability to either help with or start some sort of business for the group. And so I remember as young as just 14 years old, they were starting to prepare me for getting ready to finish high school and like apply for colleges and things like that. And they were having me work. I worked at a Western shop selling cowboy boots and stuff like that. I was working at a very young age for sure. But they try to take it to a different level, whereas the FLDS, they have farms, they have construction companies. The order tries really hard to do businesses that they consider more profitable, I guess you could say. And so
it works. It's working. Yeah. Esco, how old are you now?
I'm 27.
Okay. And you got out, you said about 6 years ago, 7 years ago?
I left a week after I turned 18. So that's close to, oh my gosh, that's almost 10 years now.
It is almost 10 years, yeah.
Almost 10 years.
Okay, I'm sorry, Melody. You asked him a question and I interjected. So if you want to follow up
I just was wanting to him to kind of go into his teenage years and what that was like for him. And then maybe from there, you can gradually go into how and why you ended up leaving.
Okay, yeah, for sure. Some crazy moments from being a teenager is when I first started driving. Again, they encourage us to do things very young. I got my first job at 13 years old, and there was a point where my mom would always drive me and drop me off, or one of my sisters would, but there were multiple times where nobody could drive me. And so at as young as 14 years old, I was taking the keys to one of the cars we had and just driving myself into work or into school or wherever I needed to go. And looking back on it, it's just so surprising because I did not know what I was doing. I had watched people drive. I had like driven four-wheelers or whatever, but I didn't know what I was doing. I didn't get proper training, but I just grabbed the vehicle and just figured it out. And so my process of learning how to drive was absolutely insane. I am shocked. And I had many close calls, so many times where I like almost ran people off roads and stuff. And it was just a disaster. It was a horrible way to learn how to drive, but that's what I did. So just so I could get to work every day. It's just crazy how it all played out.
And nobody, like that, man. And nobody trained you? Nobody said to you, this is how you drive a tractor. This is how you drive a car. This is how you drive a truck, whatever.
My sisters tried to. My mom, there was a couple times where she would be like, oh, we have to drive her anyways. Esco, let's have you drive and I'll kind of watch you, make sure you're doing it right. But she was oftentimes too scared. Like those few times she let me drive, she was always freaking out being a backseat driver. She hated it, you know? So she just didn't like doing that. So she wouldn't do that very much. And so I just had to do it on my own. My sisters would give me tips, of course, and give me advice and help me and stuff. And so I found ways, I found resources to be able to figure it out. But looking back on it, it was shocking how dangerous of a situation. So they literally gave a kid this weapon, basically, to go drive around town.
Yeah, exactly. You're a 12, 14-year-old driving a 3-ton, 4-ton truck or whatever machine you were in.
Mine was, I literally learned how to drive in a big plig van. You know those giant like 14-seaters?
Yeah.
That was the vehicle. I could barely reach the pedals on. I was driving that around town.
Oh my God.
So how many siblings crazy. Do you have, Eskel?
I have 9 siblings, 10 wow. together. So,
and do you have any contact with any of them still, or are any of them out like you are?
Yeah. So something I'm actually really excited about is one of my younger brothers just left. And now with him out, we have exactly 50% of my siblings have left. Five of my siblings are out of the order. There's still 5 of them there, but we're slowly getting there. I'm hoping to be able to help as many of them as I can. I do have 1 brother or 2 brothers now that are married in it, and it's not very likely that they'll ever leave. But for most of them, once they get around the age of 18, they look for ways to get out of there.
Was your mother or father part of the polygamy movement? In other words, did your father have multiple wives? And was your mother one of multiple wives?
Yeah, my mom was wife number 2. My dad had 3 wives, and my dad did it in a very strange way. He literally married my mom's older sister, then he married my mom, so he married his wife's sister, and then he goes and he married his own sister after that. So my dad literally, he's living incest, and he has his 3rd wife is his half-sister.
That was my next question. So what I understood also in the documentary was that they wanted to keep the bloodline pure. Or was that the FDLs?
No,
that's the Kingston. Most of the groups really focus on a bloodline.
So literally, either brother sisters were having sexual relations, or cousins, or was there, I hate to ask
uncles
this.
And nieces,
Was there ever mother-son?
Not direct mother-son, but there was. That you can go as far as direct. In the order, everything is accepted except direct full siblings. So if, as long as you're a half sibling, long as there's at least 1 separation, then you can. But they'll go as far as, the craziest one I heard of is that there was this family where one of the wives, right? She was like a 4th or 5th wife. Her husband died, and that husband had kids with one of the other wives. And then that man's kid married her. So he essentially married his mom. One of the kids did. So it gets really crazy.
So I'm going to circle back to the question about law enforcement. So not only is polygamy illegal, but incest is illegal. So how is law enforcement not seeing this? And I understand that they got raided. In the FDLS, there's 3 of them doing prison time. So I understand that law enforcement is watching and doing their due diligence to a certain point. But as what I saw last night, as of last year and the year before, this is still going on. And if I heard that there was a mother who was having sex with her son, or a half-brother was having sex with a half-sister or a full-sister, whatever. Whatever the whole thing was, it's illegal. And it's also dangerous because interbreeding is, we know, produces birth defects. They really think that the bloodline is going to be pure if they have intersexual relations? It just boggles me.
Yeah, it's definitely old-fashioned.
It's sure. Proven science.
I think they can't prove it, Andrew. And these groups are so secretive.
Oh, they can.
They're
DNA.
Not announcing this. Well, they could with DNA, but they'd have to know who to test.
Yeah, and how would so they get secrecy. Them to take the DNA test? Yeah.
Yeah.
No one's willing to take the DNA test.
There's so much secrecy. Yeah. Everybody, there's so much secrecy involved that nobody's going to agree to do that unless there's a court order. And you can't get a court order without proof. And you can't get the proof.
Okay, I'm not going to put Eskel on the spot here, but he was in there and he has proof because he saw it happen. So if Eskel went to the DA or the DA went to Eskel and he said, yes, I know that my sister, I'm making this up, that my sister is married to my brother or my brother's, what, I can prove that. Then you go to the judge, get a court order and come in and get a DNA swab and there you go. You got the proof. So why is it so hard to get the proof?
Well, in that specific scenario, I think the problem would be that if I go, I would say that. I'd say my dad married his half-sister. They would go to the half-sister and she would say, no way. I'm not his sister. he's lying. Oh, then it's just my word against hers. And it's like, okay, well, if she's willing to lie, I don't know. Like, I don't know. It just keeps on getting stuck in its own little loop.
It seems like a vicious cycle, round, like a cycle that goes around. But until somebody steps, we need more of you to come out and come forward. And so if the sister lies, we got three Eskel Jr., Eskel Sr., Eskel whatever, and say, no, she's lying. And she did marry blah, blah, blah. And all we need is one judge to execute a search warrant for DNA. And once you can prove that, then that opens up more warrants. I feel like I'm the only one thinking about this.
No, it comes back to also law enforcement being hushed up, paid off. You know, just take this money and go away and be quiet and mind your own business. And I think a lot of law enforcement is happy to do that because they figure, well, we can't control what these people are doing in their own lives and in the privacy of their own homes. And we can't prove what they're doing or not doing. And how are we going to control all these people? You see what I'm saying? It does become very complicated, yeah. Andrew. It's just not as simple. I wish it was as simple as what you're saying for the sake of the people who are the victims of these kind of groups. But it's just unfortunately not that simple.
But you bring down an empire one soldier at a time, one brick at a time, something at a time. So go in and get one piece of evidence, and then that can multiply. Say, okay, well, if this family is interbreeding, then you go get a second court order and say, all right, so the family down the road, you know, I know. I'm beating a dead horse.
With the incest specifically, a trick that they use is they'll get married in a state where it's legal. Like, I don't know if it's really Alabama, but there's some states where it's not illegal to practice incest. So they'll go there. And if they have heat from, you know, the officers or from some court order, they'll oftentimes change their residency. You know, they'll own a house in that state just so they can say, oh, they're from there. You know, they're not breaking the law. You know, they'll do anything they can to find loopholes. Oftentimes.
Okay, so that I can see that. All right, how that loophole would work. But I did not know that there was a state in the United States that doesn't think incest should be illegal. I did not know that.
Yeah, there's some wild states still. Some wild.
And of course, it would have to be Alabama because that's.
I'm guessing Kentucky too, but I don't know that. No offense to anyone from Kentucky. I just have heard
things. Yeah, no offense, but it does seem to be those southern Kentucky, Tennessee, and Alabama, Louisiana, all that. But again, I don't know that for a fact. So I'm alleging just to make sure I don't get sued.
Yes, allegedly, yes.
Okay, so Eskel, tell us how you began to get out.
Well, I definitely have my sisters to thank because when I was just 16, I watched my older sister, Amanda, leave the group and it was wild. And she is very, like, I admire her a lot because she stands up for what she believes in and she doesn't take crap from anybody. And so she was the only person that I knew in the group that would openly say, why are we living polygamy? Like, what's the reason for this? Whereas everyone else seemed too scared to say a question that directly, you know, because they always tell you, don't question your elders, don't go against what the leaders teach you, follow the prophet, right? And she was one of the only people that I knew that would still say that openly. And I watched her go through hell because of it. She got so much criticism. There was one point where my dad said straight to her face that he would rather her die or take her life than leave the group because that's like, leaving the group is the worst thing that you could possibly do. And so they would use any tactic they could. They would say anything at all to try and get people to stay here. And through that, I started seeing how manipulated the group was. I personally saw firsthand how they would go to extreme lengths, do just about anything they could, apart from necessarily locking her, chaining her down. They did ground her. They did try to lock her in her room a lot, but you know, she always found a way out of the window or something, but they go to extreme lengths to try and brainwash and keep people in the group. And seeing that caused me to question. And that's when I became more comfortable with questioning things. And as soon as you start to ask questions, it all unravels. If you're willing to just question what's being given to you, whether it's been given to you your whole life or something new that you're learning, if you're not willing to question it, then you're going to be in big trouble. And if you can question it, that's what's going to be the best help for you. And that's what found me to finally be able to leave. Started questioning things and they weren't able to give answers. And the most frustrating part was when they wouldn't even try to help me find an answer. They would get to the point where they would just be like, you just have to have faith. Like, you can't get an answer to it. You just need faith. And that would be so frustrating to me.
Did you go to the internet or did you go to social media or anywhere to see what was really going on the outside world and see that this type of lifestyle is not normal?
Yeah, I did a little bit of all of that. I definitely got access to the internet with my first little iPod. I got my hands on an iPod at around like 16 or so, and I started watching videos online. I think the biggest thing that helped is I had 1 or 2 years where I finally got to go to public school. Something happened with the polygamous school where I didn't go there for 2 years and I went to a public school, and that opened my eyes to a lot. It was so crazy to, first of all, having to try and live a lie. Lying to everyone out there. And I got to the point where I was like, wait a minute, why do I need to lie? And I would tell some of my friends and I would see their reactions, and it would, it would surprise me how shocking it was that, my dad's got 3 wives or whatever it was. And so it caused me to question. I was like, why are they so surprised about this? Like, this is normal. There's nothing wrong with it. But then they would have other things to say about it, So I definitely contribute a lot to that, being able to make friends on the outside, interact with outsiders. That helped a lot because I also would have been afraid. You know how terrifying it is to leave a group if you don't know anybody?
Of course. Oh, yeah. We hear that story over and over again because they teach you that if you leave, you're going to die. You're going to hit poverty. Mm-hmm. You're going to get sick. You're going to all these horrible things. You're going to go to hell, obviously.
Okay. I think I just figured something out, Eskel. Is your sister Amanda Ray on TikTok? And is Priscilla?
Yeah, that's her.
Is Priscilla?
Priscilla's our cousin, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Your half-sister cousin, right?
Well, Priscilla, no, she's not a half-sister. Dad is my dad's brother, so she's a close cousin.
This is crazy to follow. Okay. When I hear sister, half-sister, cousin.
Amanda is my full sister.
Yes. Yes. Okay. Awesome. I follow her on TikTok too. I just dawned on me. I was like, I wonder, he just said his sister's Amanda. And I'm like, I know I follow somebody else on TikTok that is from the Kingston clan named Amanda. And I'm like, I bet that's his sister. Because what are the chances, right? Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. She has a big
presence. Small world.
Yeah. Yes, it is. It is. Well, the cult world, right?
Yeah, the group's small enough that just about anyone from the group, I would recognize their face or their name. So,
all right, Eskel, we do have a few minutes left, and I'd like to give you the opportunity to, let's just say, make your case. Tell us where your social media content is and where should people go to learn more about the order.
Yeah. I have a YouTube channel called Eskel's Cult Experience. I use that name in a lot of ways because I like sharing my experience of growing up, but I also like sharing the new adventure of my life. And so it's not always super cult related, but it's the experiences that I've been going through throughout my life. And so if you're ever interested in that, if you ever like watching that kind of stuff, I love posting it I do it on TikTok, on YouTube's my biggest one. Right now I'm going on a deep dive through Sister Wives and reviewing a lot of those episodes. And that's been a lot of fun. But yeah, my sister does a ton too. My sister probably posts twice as much as me. And hers is just Amanda Ray. On YouTube is her biggest platform. And yeah, she posts lots of great videos. Very fun to watch.
Wow. Okay. And I just had another question for you, and it just went in one ear and out the other. Okay. I wish I remember that question because it was a good one. Okay.
I have one before we close. I just want to know, was when you actually finally decided to leave, was it an easy thing for you to actually leave, or did you just walk away and that was that? Did they try to keep you there? How did that actually transpire, your actual leaving?
So because I watched my older sisters leave, it was definitely easier physically for me to leave because I planned for over the course of 6 months to leave. And I made sure it was going to be on a day where my family was all at church, so nobody was going to be home to try and stop me. I made sure I tucked away money underneath my mattress. So I had a little bit of money to help me to get out of there. I planned and prepared. The hardest part was losing the friendships, losing my family in essence. And I'll never forget the day that I was driving away and my mom found out. She called me on the phone. And this was even on my episode. I was talking to her on the phone and she was crying. And it was so hard for me to not turn around and go back, because not only was I leaving for myself and to have my live my life and discover who I wanted to be, but I felt like I was leaving her behind, leaving her and my younger siblings trapped in this cult that who knows what's going to happen to them. And I can't protect them anymore. I can't be there with them.
Did you say, "Mom, come with me"?
Oh yeah. We've tried so many times to get my mom to come with us, and she has. She's left, but she kind of went through that same thing. She left the group and then got her sister and her husband and friends calling her saying, "You have to come back. You're going to lose your salvation. You're going to end up dying out there," like all these horrible things. And she ended up going back. And it's more of the mind game. When you're raised in it and you're constantly surrounded by that, you can truly be convinced of just about anything. And so it's
so scary. I remembered my question. You said that you wanted to leave and live your life. And so where are you today? Do you have a job? Did you find a woman outside the order? Are you married? Are you dating? Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I'm definitely in the dating phase. I like going on dates. I think of it as I only want to be with one girl. So I'm going to take my time to find the one that's right for me.
Good for you.
For sure. I'm definitely a workaholic. I work full time. I do a lot of different type of side hustles, but I also work for a construction company as well. I'm still going to school as well. I go to college and I should have my bachelor's here soon. I keep pushing it off a little bit, but yeah, I have multiple jobs, multiple side hustles. I'm always working. I'm still posting videos on YouTube. I definitely consider YouTube and social media one of my side hustles as well. So yeah, that's the one thing I will say that I always go back to, the fact that they got me working so young. It's like ingrained in me. I'm always working on stuff.
Nothing wrong with that. No, a work ethic is great, because you will do well in life if you working. Yeah, I can attest to that. If you work hard, you will reap the benefits or reward, whatever that phrase is. So any other questions from Melody? Anything else? Or Esco, anything you want to add before we say goodbye?
Not that I can think of. This was great, though. You guys had some good questions. I like this.
I do have one more, Esco. Do you have like a message or advice for anybody who, I guess I'm going to say specifically, maybe somebody who's in the order that might be doubting and might happen to be stumbling across our podcast and listening to this and, you know, on getting out and maybe kind of easing some of those fears that have been placed in their minds. What would your advice be to them?
Oh man, that's a good one. I mean, I still try. I reach out to my siblings there all the time. I always want to definitely be able to be there in any way that I can. I think the best piece of advice is just to question things, because I know if I say something like the order's wrong, it's better out here, to a cult mindset, that's just going to be blasphemy and that it'll go one ear and out the other. But one thing that even that the order teaches themselves is that if they really are trying to do their best, if they're really, you know, followers of Christ or whatever they try to teach, then they wouldn't be so forceful. They wouldn't be so demanding. So definitely pay attention to what's going on around you, and don't be so afraid to question things.
And I do have one more question, because we usually ask this of all of our guests. Where are you today in your faith?
I think it's hard to put a specific term on it, because I feel like it's a lot more organic than what a lot of religions try to put it. But the closest thing that I would be agnostic, but with a hope of a creator, but I just can't know, you know?
Everybody says that. And I am so happy to hear that. It's not that I don't want anybody to have a faith-based religion to go by, but Melody, correct me if I'm wrong, 2/3 or more of our guests have said either agnostic or atheist, that after they got out, they kind of like left the whole God theory behind.
At the very least, they don't believe in organized religion most of the time, but it depends.
Or they have a higher power. They believe in a higher power, right?
Yeah.
So, okay. All right. Well, that's pretty good. Yeah. Because if you were born into this and you were indoctrinated about the teachings of Christ and all this stuff, and then now you're just an atheist, that's pretty wild. Well, that's pretty agnostic. That's pretty, that That's a long, well, you've been out 10 years, but that's, I give you, again, a lot of credit.
It was quite a process. When I first left the order, I actually joined the mainstream LDS church, and I liked the familiarity. It really felt comfortable. I knew a lot about it. And so I was a member for quite a long time, and I served an LDS mission, all of that. It was a while.
Then what made you leave that?
Sorry, what?
What made you leave that?
I think it was just the same thing, just continuing to ask questions, continuing to get to the bottom of it, and just kind of the same thing. Like, there's too many things that they have direct answers for, where I feel like it's okay not to have an answer. I don't think we're meant to come to this earth to have an answer for everything.
Right.
And that's one thing that a lot of organized religion, they just can't stand. They want to have all the answers, even if some of the answers aren't very good.
Yeah, that makes no sense.
Like having an answer. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so exactly. It's
fascinating. All right, Eskel. Oh my God, what a phenomenal interview, and forthright and forthcoming. And thank you so much for joining us today. And I have an idea that I want to bounce off you after we stop recording. So I think it might be interesting. So, all right.
Yes. Thanks again, Eskel. We appreciate you coming on the show.
For sure. Thanks for having me. This was fun.
Okay.
And once again, we want to thank Eskel so, so much for coming on the show and sharing some really hard parts about his story and his truth. I mean, some of that stuff is difficult to talk about, especially like the incest that goes on in there. And, you know, some of that, the crazier stuff, the polygamy, those are things that are really private and personal that happen inside some of these groups that have some of these more extreme teachings. And he shares his story, and he shares it with ease. He's done enough deconstructing that he can share it, and he's detached from it. You can tell.
Yeah. And like I said at the beginning, I watched his document. Well, not his. So his order is in one documentary, but he's actually featured in another documentary, which I'll watch. But right. I urge anybody listening, if they want, I don't even know how to present this. If you want a really good insight into what the FLDS and the Order, the Kingston cult, are really up to and what they've been up to for years and where Eskel just came from, watch Secrets of Polygamy. And then what's the one that Eskel's in? It's called...
The other one is Escaping Polygamy. And that one is... I think that one has like 4 seasons, and I think that was the first one they did.
But my heart broke because the first 2 episodes, and I think the 3rd, is the man who's an ex-law enforcement who narrates the show, and not just narrates, but he's the one that drives around and visits the people and interviews the mothers who've had their children kidnapped from them so they can be primed and groomed to be wives at 12 years old. They want their children back. And my heart was bleeding and broken for these poor people. And it's very disturbing to watch. And they even give you a trigger warning in the beginning. So I encourage you to watch it, but be either have a box of tissues next to you or be ready for a big, you know, like slap across your head because you're going to get hit hard.
Yeah. It can be
a
hard watch.
This is just, this is why we're doing this podcast. I think this was one of the more, at least in the polygamy field, extreme cults that we've covered.
Yeah,
I'm just despicted. The whole thing is despicable. And I don't see how the order is ever going to be dismantled. I just don't see it. They're so wealthy. They're so powerful.
Yeah,
they're going to be around for a long, long time. The FLDS might trickle down because they're all getting arrested. They're all, people are fleeing. But I don't know.
Warren Jeffs is still running his group from prison, so...
Well, let's talk about that for a second, because, they kept talking about that behind bars, and I know the mafia did this. So when John Gotti and all the rest of them were in jail, they were running their mafia from inside. Why is law enforcement or the Department of Corrections allowing this? Cut off his phone calls, cut off his mail. I'm sure his lawyer would probably fight that, but... If you want to cut off the head of the snake, that's how you do it.
Yeah.
And I don't know why they're letting him do this.
I think it's not legal. I think they can't legally cut him off from everybody. They would have to have some kind of court order, and there would have to be laws in place blocking that. And maybe there needs to be some laws created that when you are in prison for certain things like leading a cult, that maybe then you don't get contact and you are legally shut off, and they can do it legally. But I think legally right now, you know, even if you're in prison for the most heinous things, you still have rights.
Yeah, unfortunately. I don't know. I don't have the answer, but I have the suggestions, and I just don't get why they're allowing this. But I guess you're right. I guess just because he's arrested, and I would think he's living a plush lifestyle in that prison. I don't know what prison he's in, but that's just a pure speculation. So
I don't know. I mean, maybe if they're being paid off, maybe, but
that's another option. Yeah.
He might also be in some type of solitary confinement or isolation because they're afraid that somebody else is going to take him out if he's in general population.
Well, if he's in isolation, then how is he getting the messages out? That's what I want to say.
I just mean within the prison, like isolated from the other prisoners, but still has visitors.
Yeah, I don't know that.
I don't know either.
Yeah.
I'm speculating too, Andrew. We're just both guessing here.
All right. But again, Esco, I want to thank Esco very much for coming on. That was very brave of him, and I wish him the best. And maybe hopefully down the road, we'll maybe get his sisters and brothers to come on, and either one at a time or all together. We do have a special event coming up in a couple of weeks where we're going to have six sisters come on.
Siblings. There's a couple brothers in there too.
Okay, good. There's six siblings that are come on all at once on one episode. So stay tuned for that. That's going to be a very big episode. So anyway, thank you, Eskel.
We've got some organizing to do for that. Yes, thank you to Eskel, and thank you to all of you as well for tuning into Cultimatum. Your support is always greatly appreciated. And if you enjoyed today's episode, if you could just take a moment to rate and review us on platforms such as an Apple and Spotify, it does really help us out and boost our ratings. And don't forget to share, follow, and keep listening to all of our latest episodes as well.
You can also connect with us by joining our Facebook group, Cultimatum Podcast, where we dive deeper into these important topics.
And you can find us on additional social media platforms, including Instagram, Pinterest, YouTube, and Thread.
If you have a personal experience with cults or human trafficking that you'd like to share, reach out to us at cultimatumpodcast.com.
And if you are an ex-cult member looking for any additional support, you can consider joining the Cult Escape and Recovery Group on Facebook.
Please check out my other podcast, Digital Dating with Anonymous Andrew, a dating podcast for modern romance. If you'd like to help us with the cost of maintaining the podcast, you can show your support through the Buy Us a Cup of Coffee link in the show notes. Every bit helps in our mission to spread awareness about cults and human trafficking.
And as always, stay safe, stay informed, and remember, you are not alone.